Jeg er i gutt nummer, jeg er i to gutt nummer dager, så han er ikke veldig gutt nummer, så da er det samme.
Are you from this? Because I'm
using this chair.
No. Ah, you can use that chair. I love it, because I prefer to stand here, because then I can point to these lights. Not from that side.
Hello.
The vegetarian one?
I think so. Yeah.
That's fine.
Could start. Any chairs?
Is there a problem in there? Thank you.
So, since Nils is not here today, I'm going to introduce myself. So, those who don't know me, my name is Slobodan Petrović. I teach intrusion detection. And this topic has something to do with intrusion detection and the intrusion detection systems with these IDS. Huh? Yeah. There is a microphone. So it is being recorded and streamed as far as I know. And I can hear myself on the loudspeaker. So as long as you hear the loudspeaker, it should be all right. You can also go to this Omnom and follow the stream. Hopefully it will work. So the topic for today on our ex-NIS seminar, and now it's EEC seminar, it's speeding up or accelerating K-means clustering for intrusion detection systems. After a short introduction, we are going to expose the original K-means algorithm. Then the most of this lecture is about application of properties of distance measures like triangle inequality to accelerating k-means. And at the end, I'm going to enumerate some research questions regarding application of this algorithm in intrusion detection. And why is that? Because we have proposed some master thesis topics about this, and we have some PhD ongoing research on this. So, a short introduction into intrusion detection systems. These are the systems that automatically find intrusions in traffic or log files, so on hosts. There are two main categories of these systems, misuse detection and anomaly detection systems, where in misuse detection or signature-based intrusion detection, we have signatures of known attacks, previously known attacks, that are placed in the knowledge base, we call it knowledge base of the intrusion detection system. Then in the production, usually sessions, but sometimes single packets are compared, their content is compared to these signatures, and if a match is found, then we raise an alarm. So this is how it works. Now, in anomaly detection, it's the other way around. We define what is normal, and every discrepancy from normality is alerted as an attack. Obviously, in anomaly detection, we are capable of detecting so-called zero-day attacks, because zero-day will probably cause some discrepancy from normality. So we don't have to know what this zero-day exactly is. We can investigate that further later. So this is very short about intrusion detection systems. So the essence of this is that we have a knowledge base in both cases. In anomaly detection case, even though we don't explicitly have the knowledge base in most cases, because normality is very difficult to define, so such a knowledge base would be very large. But we can reduce what we have in knowledge base to really explicit database. In the worst case, in both misuse and anomaly detection, we have to search through the whole knowledge base at each test. So each session or each packet that we processed has to be checked against the whole database. So this is difficult to do in real time. It has to be very fast. So how can we solve this problem? There are two possibilities. Either we use faster algorithms, and there are some very fast algorithms employing bit parallelism, but we cannot do faster than that because this is already sublinear time complexity. It's very, very fast. Now, if this fails, or if we are not satisfied with only searching faster, we can reduce the data set. So today's talk is about reduction of the data set. So instead of comparing the traffic or log records with every signature in the database, we group these signatures and compare this traffic or logs with representatives of the groups only. So if we have K groups, where K is much less than the length of the database, the number of the records in the database, then we can only compare with the group representatives. So that should be much, much faster than comparison against every record in the database. So we concentrate on this data reduction. To group these data records, we need a set of features, what characterizes a record. So we usually assign a set of features to each record, and in such a way we get a vector of features for each record. Then we need distance measure to compare these vectors in order to group them, and we need an efficient algorithm to group them. In this context, when we say grouping, we mean classification. And this classification, of course, can be supervised or unsupervised. And today we are focused on unsupervised classification, in particular clustering. And clustering is, in very brief words, finding structure in data. One of these clustering algorithms is a partitional algorithm. So clustering algorithms can be partitional or grouping. So we can either start from atomic records and try to group them, or we start from everything and try to partition the set. So we are considering the partition algorithm, in particular this k-means. This is a partition algorithm. So we have the whole set of vectors, and we want to divide it somehow. So the problem is like this. Given a set of feature vectors, partition it in k clusters, where k is given in advance, such that in each cluster we have similar feature vectors and the clusters are well separated. So this is very, very fluid definition, but we can define it mathematically, but we don't need that today. Separation and similarity are defined with respect to the distance measure that we have chosen. And this distance must be a metric in the mathematical sense. And the definition of a metric is like this. The three items here, the first three items are trivial. So if A and B are given, then the distance is positive or equal to zero. If it is equal to zero, then A is equal to B. Symmetry, distance of AB is the same as distance of BA, but this one, the triangle inequality is the most important. So if the triangle inequality doesn't hold, it's not a metric. Okay? So you know triangle inequality. So imagine a triangle. So the path from A to C must be shorter or equal to the sum of the paths from A to B and the B to C. Otherwise, we don't have a triangle. So the triangle inequality actually characterizes metric the strongest. Examples of some metrics, we use this on a daily basis, Euclidean distance. So it's the sum of squares of the differences between the coordinates and the square root of it. Now, generalization of this is the Minkowski metric, where we have absolute value here and not square, but any power. And then it's, if the power is p, then the pth root. So the special case is when this is 1, then we have so-called Manhattan distance. So that's the sum, and the first root, of course, is no root. So we have the sum of absolute values of differences of these coordinates. So that's so-called Manhattan or city block distance. The most often used is Euclidean distance. In general, we have, when instead of 2, we have a p, it's called Minkowski metric. And interestingly enough, when we have infinity here, then it's a maximum of coordinates, okay? Or maximum of differences. But we concentrate on Euclidean distance because it's most often used. It's geometric, you know? Now, edit distance is when we don't have the same length of these vectors. Then we cannot do this, because this requires that we know every coordinate, and they are all the same. So edit distance is when we have some missing data. Now, it can be shown that this is also a metric. So a metric means usually triangle inequality. So this is sometimes difficult to prove. Now, we can explain the k-means. So the original algorithm is 50 years old. It's online clustering method. You are not required to have all the vectors in advance. Everything that you cluster, you don't have to have it in advance. You must have k initial vectors, and then the vectors arrive somehow online or something, and then each time a new feature vector, or we can say that it's a point, because it's a point in an n-dimensional space, each time it arrives, we assign it to the group that is closest. And it is closest when its center is closest. We call that the centroid, and we are going to explain why centroid, not center. So after adding the new point, we compute a new centroid, and this new centroid is the mean of the points in the group. So that's why it is called k-means. Now, far too many means calculations are present here, because each time you get a new vector, you not only compute the distance between this new vector or point to the existing centroids, but once you assign it to some centroid, you have to recompute the centroid again. So you have far too many centroid calculations. You don't have to do that if you have all the vectors in advance. And this is assumed in the most known variant of k-means, which is referred to very often as Lloyd's algorithm. So this is a batch algorithm. You have all the vectors in advance. So it sounds like our database. You have our database of intrusion signatures in advance. So you're not waiting for these database records to arrive from somewhere. So this is applicable to our case. So it's a batch method. All the points are present in advance. We start with k centroids, which are chosen among these points that are present. Now, how do we choose? It's whole science. So there are several methods to do this, and this influences the convergence, because it's a convergent method. Yeah. So the algorithm is like this. Until the algorithm converges, assign each point to the cluster whose centroid is the closest to it. Then compute the new centroid of each cluster at the mean as the mean of the points assigned to the current centroid. And now, what is convergence? Convergence means that no point changes the cluster in some iteration. Now, empirically, and it has been known for a long time, it's 5 iterations at most. And it has been proved that it converges. But the speed of convergence actually depends on how we initialize. We could talk hours on this. We don't have time for this. But let's illustrate this on an example. So, since we are in the IDS field, suppose we have anomaly-based IDS, which measures 3 parameters. The CPU usage in percent, memory usage percent, network usage percent. So you can see that on Windows, on Linux, everywhere. So suppose we say everything beyond 50% is abnormal or something. That would be anomaly detection. Now, we don't care how we define normality. Here, we just measure these parameters, CPU usage, memory usage, and network usage. So suppose we have used 10 observations at 10 different time slots, not intervals. So CPU usage, memory usage, net usage. So that's 20%, 40%, 10%, etc., etc. So V1, V2, etc. to V10. So we have 10 vectors to classify, to cluster. Okay? And suppose that we have to cluster in 2 classes, because it is required in k-means. You have to know the number of classes in advance. The initial centroids, somehow we determine that it is V1 and V2. So we proclaim these first 2 centroids. We use Euclidean distance, so the square root of the sum of squares of the differences between the coordinates of 2 vectors. And we have to determine the clusters and the new centers of the clusters after the first iteration. Now, centroids should be here. We shall see after this calculation why centroids. Now, since we use Euclidean distance, we actually have to check. V1 and V2 are the centers. So we take V3 and compute the distance between V3 and V1 and V3 and V2 and which one is smaller. So 0.1, so the distance between V3 and V2 is smaller, so we assign V3 to V2. So we do that with all the rest of the vectors. So every vector is checked like this. So we had 8 calculations of distance for these 10, because we have 2 centers. Now, if we have a lot of vectors, so the fact that we have 2 centers doesn't mean anything, so we can say that we have had n calculations of distance. So after this first iteration, we have these classes, V1, and to V1, these vectors are assigned, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And V2, these vectors are assigned to it, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Okay? Should be clear. Now, what we do now, according to the algorithm, compute the new centroid. And why? Because our center of the classes has moved. It's not now V1 and V2 any longer, because we have changed the clusters. Now we have to compute the centers. And in the case of Euclidean distance and vectors that are of the same length, it's very easy. We just compute the arithmetic mean of each coordinate. So we get this one. Now this centroid is not in the data set at all. That's why we call it centroid, not center. Now, this is the new, say, center of the class. In the Lloyd's algorithm, he says it's mass center, center of mass. And if you read that paper, you will see that it is about quantization in PCM systems, pulse code modulation, telecommunication. It has nothing to do with intrusion detection or anything similar. It's very difficult to read that paper if you don't know physics. But that's essentially the same. Now, for the second cluster, the same, the mean of the coordinates. Now, that was one iteration. And now we have the same data set, and we have to do it again. So we have to compute the distance between each of these vectors and the new centroid. And then there might be change of cluster. So some clusters could change the position, the center. Some vectors could change the center to which they are assigned. And this is suboptimal. So here is the potential to improve, to speed up. And why is that? Because it can be shown, or it can be empirically shown, the experience is that after a couple of iterations, very few clusters, very few vectors change center. So if very few vectors change center, that means that most computations of the distance you do in vain. You don't have to do it. And that's a significant slowdown. And why is that? Because the time complexity of computation of these centers depends on the dimension of the vectors, because it's a square root of the sum of squares of the differences per coordinate. So if you have d coordinates, that's d complexity. Yeah. So you can actually, if possible, save some actually significant number of operations on this. And the whole talk is about that. So we have already seen that McQueen's algorithms is even slower than this one, because you have more centroid computations than Lloyd's algorithm. But if you really don't have all the vectors in advance, then you must use this one. You cannot use Lloyd's. Still, we should avoid distance calculations that are not needed, and this can be exploited to accelerate the Lloyd's algorithm. The question is how? Recall the definition of a metric. We said triangle inequality must hold. We can exploit this to speed up the k-means, and there are several ways to do this, and this is from 21st century, you see? So the algorithm is 50 years old, but recently everybody has had interest in speeding up this. And why is that? Because they want, in big data analysis, when you have a lot of vectors to cluster, you employ this in distributed computing architectures, for example, Hadoop, Spark, Flink, etc., etc. And from that comes this interest in the topic. So you can do it faster. So we are going to explain two lemmas. We are going to prove them. And these two lemmas are exploited in every algorithm here. We are not going into details of the algorithms, but I think if we explain the lemmas, you will have it clear how we can speed up the computation. So start with the first method, compare means and sort means. So that's the first one to study. From this, we get this lemma one. So if we have a point and two centroids, C and C prime, and suppose that X is assigned to C in some iteration of k-means, and to do this, we had to compute the distance between X and C. So that was necessary. Now, C and C prime are known, because the clustering is known before the next iteration. So we know C prime as well. We can compute the distance between the centroids, C and C prime. So that's easy. Now, we would like to avoid the computation of distance between X and C prime in the next iteration. So this is where the speed up comes from. Yeah? How can we do that? You see, the triangle. So we have the point X and two centers, C and C prime, centroids, C and C prime. So X is assigned to C, so we know this distance between X and C. C prime is known, so we know the distance between C and C prime, and we can use the triangle inequality. D, the distance between C and C prime, must be less than or equal to the sum of these two distances, XC and XC prime. And then, if we change the side of this, D of XC, we get D of CC prime minus D of XC must be less than or equal to D of X C prime. So we would like to avoid computing D of X C prime in the next iteration. So how far away must C and C prime be to guarantee that X is closer to C than to C prime? In which case we don't have to compute D of X C prime, because we know that it is further from C prime than to C. So it doesn't change, the X doesn't change the cluster. in the next iteration. So this is our lemma too. So if we say that 2D of XC is less than or D of D of CC prime, so the distance between the centers, then if we substitute this with 2D of XC prime, we get 2D of XC prime minus D of XC prime. So that's D of XC prime. So we get D of XC prime is less than or equal to D of XC. So if this holds, that the distance between the centers, the centroids, is greater than two distances of between X and C that we already know, then we don't have to check D of XC prime. So we don't have to compute this, and we have saved actually the number of coordinates computations. So if the vectors are of length 50, so we have saved 50 computations with this. So we never compute this distance. It's much easier actually to compute this, to check this. So whether 2d of xc, which we already have, is less than or equal d of cc prime, which we already have. So it's just one computation. So this is our lemma one. We can exploit this, so we never have to check whether x is closer to c or c prime if we know that this holds. So that's for the next iteration. That method that exploits that is called compare means. A variant of this is sort means. So we have k clusters, and we make a matrix, k times k, of centroids to centroid distances that are computed after each iteration. We sort ascending each row of the matrix. When finding the closest centroid to the point x, we search centroids from the currently assigned centroid and check the condition. And we find something, then we have to change the cluster. This is faster than compare means on average, but we have some overhead in computing this matrix. So essentially what we need from here is this lemma one. So this condition must hold, and if it holds, then we don't have to compute this. We know that x will not change the cluster in the next iteration. So this is this Phillips method, sort means and compare means. Now Elkan's method from 2003, it exploits this lemma one, but also another lemma that we are going to show here. So if x is a point and c is the centroid at the beginning of the iteration, and c prime is the centroid after the iteration, we have seen that after the iteration we have to compute the new centroids. So we say that c has moved to c prime. So the centroid has moved after each iteration. Now this movement can be big or small. If it is small, we can exploit that. And we said empirically, it is small after a couple of iterations. So we know that x is assigned to c in the current iteration of k-means, so we know the distance, d of xc. Now from c, the centroid at the beginning of iteration, and c prime, the centroid at the end of iteration, we can compute the distance between these two centroids, the old one and the new one. It can be very small. To speed up k-means, we must be able to compute a lower bound for d of xc prime. So for this particular algorithm and the others as well from this family, without explicitly computing d of xc prime. So we have to actually estimate d of xc prime, but lower bound. Now from the triangle inequality again, so d of xc is less than the sum of these two distances, cc prime and xc prime. So directly from that we have our lemma 2. What is the lower bound for d of xc prime? So d of xc prime is greater than or equal to d of xc minus d of cc prime. So we know this, we know that, so we know the lower bound. Now The Elkan's method uses both lemma 1, which is also used in sort means and compare means, and lemma 2. So if x is a point and C and C prime are any two centroids, then by lemma 2, we just use instead of 2D X or C, we just divide by 2. So we have this condition. One half of D of C, C prime has to be greater than or equal to D of X, C. From that follows that D of X, C prime is greater than or equal to D of X, C. So we don't have to compute D of X, C prime because it will, X will not change the class. So we know that from before. Now, how does this method use lemma 1? Suppose we do not know exact value of D of X, C, you see? But we know some upper bound of it, call it U. Then, as long as U is less than or equal to this, because this is the upper bound. So, as long as U is less than or equal to this one, we know that we don't have to compute D of X, C prime. First time, when it becomes greater than this one, then we have to compute D of X, C prime. So that's how we can use lemma 1 in our algorithm. So we don't have to know the exact value of D of X, C either. Now, for lemma 2, if X is a point and C the centroid before, at the beginning of the current iteration, C prime after the current iteration, then suppose we do not know the exact value of D of X, C, but we know the lower bound of D of X, C, which is L. Okay? Now, by lemma 2, directly, we can substitute. So D of X, C prime is greater than or equal to D of X, C minus D of C, C prime, but we don't know D of X, C, but the lower bound, you see? We can substitute because lower bound is less than this. So it will not change this one. Okay? So we have L minus D of C, C prime, and we can call it L prime. Which means, if we know the lower bound of D of X, C, we know the lower bound of D of X, C prime as well. So we don't have to compute D of X, C prime either. Informally, we can say that if L was a good approximation for D of X, C, and C did not move too much, so moving from C to C prime, then L prime is also a good approximation for D of X, C prime. And that's the essence of the algorithm. So we, instead of computing D of X, C and D of X, C prime, which is costly, because these vectors have some dimension, we only compare with estimates. So the main idea of the algorithm, instead of using the exact values of the distances of the points to the cluster centers, we use them, their upper and lower bounds, which is much less costly. It's just one operation. Sometimes, though, it will be necessary to compute D of XC, but never of D of XC prime. So we should go into details of the algorithm to see this, but it's not very often. So that's the Elkins method, which satisfies three properties that are very important and which all these methods should satisfy. It can use any initialization method, so in any initial assignment of the cluster centers. Given the same initial cluster centers, it must produce the same result as ordinary k-means. Otherwise, it's just estimate of k-means, but it is really k-means. And it can use any metric. The only requirement is actually the triangle inequality. So it can be complex numbers, can be objects, it can be anything. But must be a metric. This one is, the authors have tried, and on some data sets, they got 50 times faster than Lloyd's algorithm of the same data. So this is really fast. The two methods that I have mentioned after that, Hamlisch and Drake's and Hamlisch methods, they are very similar to this. So they exploit some very, very small improvements, but the lemmas that are used are the same, so we are not going to focus much on that. You can read that in the literature. Which leads us to finalization of this lecture or talk by enumerating some research questions, knowing that we can now compute k-means very fast. And bear in mind that our database is large and that we need to implement the classification algorithm, whichever, like k-means, in a distributed computing architecture like Hadoop or Spark or Flink similar architectures. The question is, how do we convert this database into a set of feature vectors? Because depending on the IDS, these feature vectors could contain not only numbers, they could contain strings, they could contain objects, they could contain ranges of values. So what to do with this? So this is one of the research questions. So what is the optimal set of features that characterize the text signatures? So not only regarding the type of features, but also the number of features. Which features mean more than the others? The second would be, what is the optimal number of clusters? So is it really, for example, in a very famous IDS Snort that everybody knows, they have grouped initially these signatures, into so-called rule files, into groups, and each group is contained in one rule file. And these rule files contain similar attacks. But is this optimal grouping? We don't know. So could we group them better? If we take out every signature, put them in a single database of signatures and try to classify them into 1, 2, 3, 4, how many clusters? Okay, so what is the number of clusters? This affects the efficiency of the IDS, so the less clusters, the better. But if we have very small number of clusters, then we can increase the false positive rate, which is the case where we say it is an attack, but it is not. And this is something that bugs the operators of these IDSs anyway, even without clustering. So how would that classification affect this matter? Next question, what if we use unequal length feature vectors to characterize the signatures? This is typical. Sometimes we have sensors, and some sensors cannot measure some aspects of traffic, some features. So some of these features are missing. How can we compare them? Is edit distance good for this? If yes, it's a metric. If not, what kind of measure would that be? Is it a metric? Because if it is not, we cannot speed up the k-means and the other algorithms. Next question, what is the best cluster representative? Is it a centroid? Because we know that the centroid in general, it's not the vector from the feature vector set. Original. So is such a representative good enough? Then, if it is not k-means, some other algorithms, also partitional, but also the other category, so-called hierarchical algorithms, they might be possible to accelerate by some other property, maybe. So can we accelerate them as well? What is the quality of the obtained cluster? We require that the vectors that are in one cluster are very similar to each other, but from different clusters they should be very, very different. Huh? And we have cluster quality measures for this. And finally, how can we implement all this in distributed architecture? This has become very popular recently, and we have some papers from this year, for example, doing this. And trying to do it with triangle inequality, speeding up on distributed architectures. And there are some technical issues with this that have to be solved, and this is one of the core topics. That's all. Here are some references, so if you have any questions, please ask. Yes? Box. Can you please throw this box to... Yeah, I don't know whether this is activated.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. Yep,
yes.
Could you go back to, or go forwards to slide number 38?
38, that's the next one.
Let's see. Something about, and C did not move too much at the end of the iteration.
Uh-huh.
How do we define moving too much?
By this, you see, these, you know, the moving too much is actually with this, 1/2 of D of CC prime.
Okay, so if it moves less than that limit.
Less than that, yeah.
Okay. That was my question.
What if it does move too much?
Then we have to compute the distance.
Okay.
So the savings here are where we don't have to compute this distance, and it, at least it will be, in the beginning, it will be in half of the cases. So that's not much saving. But after a couple of iterations, very few clusters actually change the cluster. So empirically, it has been known from the very beginning that it is five iterations. Even after one iteration, it was pretty good classification if you initialize well. And they even defined a method that was called non-convergent methods of k-means, which only consisted of one iteration. And it was good enough. So if you have a million data set and you don't have resources to iterate too much, you can use one iteration, which produces reasonable results. More questions? Yes.
If you don't recompute the every iteration for dx of x prime, then will the will it not eventually end up with some kind of what's it called? A differentiation, like a like an uncertainty?
No.
No.
No. So the method produces exactly the same clustering as the original Lloyd's method. So that's the point here. So we don't have to estimate anything. We may estimate the distance. We may not compute the exact distances in between the computations. But at the end, what we get is assignment to the centers that is absolutely the same as with without the speeding up. Because there are other methods to speed up k-means, but they don't guarantee that you get the same result.
Okay.
So it converges, yes?
So first, the yes-no question. Anything happen to the false negatives?
False negatives? Well, you know, all these false positives, false negatives, true positives, and true negatives, they are related between themselves.
Right.
So which means if you increase the false positives, that will affect the others as well. So we would like actually to classify in such a way that we don't increase false positives too much, and that will have positive influence on the other parameters as well.
Okay, so it could impact the false negatives.
Sure.
In an undesirable way. Okay,
definitely.
So
it's not possible to avoid.
Right, okay. So then the real question goes, this is in an intrusion detection system, and what if you have an adversary and you look at this from a game theoretic perspective? Would it be possible to, if he knew that you were doing this algorithm, could he kind of doctor the bit pattern such as to force a false negative, that is, to get an attack through without being detected?
It is possible with misuse detection, even without this method. So you can always replicate the knowledge base, because the knowledge base contains at most all the known attacks. And if the defender knows all the known attacks, so does the attacker. So you can do it. But you cannot do it with anomaly detection, because what is normal for you, it's only for you.
So this,
so if you keep that secret,
okay,
the attacker has no way of replicating your equivalent normality database.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Was that Stuart? Did you? No.
My question is about the 30 to 50 times increase. Uh-huh. Is this regardless of how many dimensions you're using, or does it?
It is with some concrete dimension in mind, because the authors have tried that on particular data sets. And one of them was, don't confuse that with KDD Cup 1999. So a year before that, it was KDD Cup 1998, that has nothing to do with intrusion detection. It's another, you know, KDD, it's a special interest group on classification of the ACM, American Computer Science Society. Now, they organize contests each year they give a task to the community, and then the community tries to classify. Now, in 1998, they gave they issued some challenge, and that challenge consisted of a data set, and they tried that on this data set, and the speed up was 50 times compared to the others. So we have in mind concrete. Now, of course, the question that follows, how can we generalize this? We cannot. But, for example, it has been tried on 40 dimensions in the IDS realm, and it is much faster. You know, whenever you don't compute the distance, then you save 40 computations. That's a lot. Yeah. More questions? Well, if not, we thank the speaker. Since I'm also leaving.
Okay, thank you.
Who was that? You. It was an interesting question. So the professors don't come.
Will pick this up, but I have nothing to do with it.
Det meste der var greit, men jeg forstod ikke helt hvordan han ble å konvertere de forskjellige større enn mindre enn det hvordan.
Jeg forstod ikke så mye, så jeg ikke sier det å spørre meg. Jeg forstod at det var bedre.
du forstod vel hvordan han lagde sin nye software. Det var altså først. Så tok han jo... Først så tok han jo også sa at dette en eller to mangler som man skal oppe. Det på, kvalitet på mangler som man skal. Og deretter, derfra, så sa han at de skal fylles med de som nærmest, og da regner vi ut på en måte distansen, som, eller lengden på nettet. Du har vel lært om lærer jeg egnet lengden av nettet, ikke sant? Tror du de kan skrive på tavla?
Er det fort for høye? Har de noe visket med da? Finner de da de som nærmere hverandre. For eksempel B1 nærmere B7 enn det B2. Det den formen.